Hello, Money Multipliers. Welcome back to another episode of the Money Multiplier Podcast. I'm your host, Hannah Kessler, and we ask ourselves, do our dollars make sense? So today, Dad and I were over here in St. Louis, and we're actually at a really cool venue. It's the Union Station over here. They have a whole bunch of restaurants, the event RubeCon, as you can see right here behind us. The event is actually here in the Union Station, and we've actually been staying on the property for a few nights as well. So I kind of got Dad in here doing this recording with me today as he's here. So Dad, I appreciate you being here.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is an awesome event to be at. So RubeCon stands for Real Estate Wealth Builders Conference, right? And this event here, we did it last year for the first time in Arizona. It's an every year event. It's going to be here next year too at the same location, which is a really, really cool location in St. Louis, my old stomping grounds. And this is where Hannah was actually born.
Yep.
Was in St. Louis back in 1999. So the event RubeCon, it's put on by a guy named, his last name is Heiner, Dustin Heiner, H-E-I-N-E-R. And I'm telling you guys, you need to just check out Dustin's stuff. He really, really does a great job with the event. He has a lot of followers, especially if you are into real estate. And it's not all about real estate, but a lot of the topics are, right, they are associated with real estate. So how come we're here? Because in about an hour, I'm actually going on stage to speak on the main stage for a 90-minute presentation on the Money Multiplier Method. There's going to be probably, how many people? 350 people in the room?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, maybe 300, maybe 400, right? But so this is day two of the three-day event, and we're here today at this event. We're about to go on stage in about an hour. So really excited about that. It's, we are on the main stage. There's no other speaker speaking at the same time we are. So it'll be really, really cool. And we're going to change some people's lives with their financial position.
I know. And it's some powerful stuff that we teach. And I'm really excited too, because some of y'all, if you guys have been working with us, you may know Joe Sundemeyer on the application team. She is here. She lives here in St. Charles. So she's going to come down and kind of hang out with us for a little bit. So I'm excited to see Joe.
Yeah, Joe's been on our application team since day one.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see her too. I haven't seen her in a long time. She just happens to be here local in St. Louis.
Yep. So today's topic of what we're going to talk about is going to kind of be a short and sweet episode, but it's talking about the tax advantages of your infinite banking policy. And just high level recap, all right, because if this is your first ever episode tuning in or ever hearing about the infinite banking concept, the money multiplier, high level, what we're doing and why we're utilizing the policies is to truly decentralize the currency where you are now in total ownership and control of where you're leaving your hard-earned money at. And so just to touch on one point of the advantages of why we're practicing this is, number one, there are tax advantages. And just like how we say in the presentation is that the whole goal is that we want to pay tax on the money one time only at the lowest rate possible, and then get those dollars into a tax-free environment where now it's growing tax-free. So Dad, just talk a little bit about how that's totally opposite to what we've been conventionally taught.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, so the thing that I'm just going to say, and I'm just going to be transparent and say it, is do not start an IBC policy just because you think you have tax advantages. Don't, that's the wrong reason to start a policy. The policy can never put you in a position tax-wise that's any worse. It can only improve the position. And as Hannah says, the thing we want to do is pay tax on our money one time only. So anytime that we pay policy premium, and there's very few exceptions to this, but I'm just going to say on a broad scale, anytime we pay policy premium, we are paying that policy premium with after tax dollars, after tax dollars. So what that means is that we pay tax on our money one time only. And that's what you want to do. You want to pay tax on your money one time only. You want to get that money into a tax-free environment. and you want the government completely out of your hair, do you not? Not only do you get the money in a tax-free environment, but guess what else it's doing? It is growing. It is compounding and growing inside of the policy, which is inside of the tax-free environment. So all of the growth that's happening inside of your policy is growing tax-free. And the way we teach IBC is that, okay, so like if you put money in a policy and if you want to get money out of the policy, well, you're not going to take the money out in a form of a withdrawal. No, no, no. You would very, very seldom take that money out in the form of a withdrawal. So instead, what we do is we utilize policy loans, right? So a loan against the policy. And even more cool about this is that if you take a loan out of the policy, the thing that you're doing is you're not interrupting any of that principle in the policy, because anytime we take a policy loan, it's not your money you're taking. You're actually putting your policy up for collateral, taking a loan from the general fund of the insurance company. So all your money is still in the policy, growing tax-free, even though you're using it. So how cool is that? You use your money, and it's all still in the policy, growing tax-free.
And not interrupting the growth. Now, I will argue and say this, though. Yes, there's some people think that you can only take out loans from the policy. But yes, you can take out withdrawals and even tax-free withdrawals. But that we don't really start talking about that until we get into the later stages of our life. Maybe if we're utilizing the policy to supplement income during those retirement years and different things like that. But I'll tell y'all, I mean, probably when I get to that age of retirement, I'm probably not even going to take out the withdrawals. I'm going to start and keep continuing to take out my policy loans. But there are different ways of how you can take out those tax-free withdrawals from it. And actually, what does one gentleman say? He's at the insurance company and he says, hey, what we do is we teach people how to create tax-free income, guaranteed tax-free income.
And the key word is guaranteed, because the thing about the policy, and it's unlike any other vehicle on the planet, is it's growing tax-free. And when I say growing, it's guaranteed to grow. There's no interruption of the compounding effect whatsoever. So like earlier when you started this episode, the thing that you talked about is the traditional methods, what people do. And those traditional methods are people tend to put their money in 401ks, IRAs, qualified plans. And why do they do that? Well, because that's what they've been taught to do. That's what your parents, your grandparents, your friends, and your colleagues are teaching you to do. That's conventional thinking. But the thing that you're doing is you're delaying paying the tax. So all you're really doing is kicking the can down the road. Because if we really talk about money and what money does, right, is a dollar worth more today or in the future?
Today.
If you ever forget that, think about how many candy bars you could buy 25 years ago for a dollar, how many you can buy today. Are taxes going to go up or go down?
They're
going to go up. And even if they don't go up, we're taxed on more crap all the time. And question number three, if you have a choice to pay tax on the small amount of the seed or the large amount of harvest, which one do you want to pay tax on?
The seed.
The small amount of the seed. Well, anytime we put money in a 401k IRA qualified plan, we're violating all of those answers, right?
But it's all I've known.
That's all you've been taught. Absolutely. And so let's go another step into it as far as taking a withdrawal. Just so you guys know out there, the high 20,000 foot view of this is, can you take out a tax withdrawal? You absolutely can take out a tax-free withdrawal. However, it's going to be up to the cost basis. So let's just say over a period of time, X amount of years, you've injected $100,000 into the policy. In other words, you've paid $100,000 of premium into the policy, right?
Yep.
And that could be over 1 year, 10 years, 20 years, whatever it is, okay? So that $100,000, because you've already paid tax on that money before you put it into the policy, it can be withdrawn tax-free up to the cost basis. In this case, it would be up to the $100,000. And then anything above and beyond the $100,000 would be taxable as ordinary income. If you withdraw. But we don't do that. We don't take out policy loans. Let me go one step deeper. This is my daughter, Hannah. Okay. As you guys know that. I own policies. Okay. I take out policy loans. I continue to buy more policies. I put more premium in my policy. I put more premium, add more policies because I want to pay more premium. So how come I add more premium? How come I buy more policies? Well, it's like depositing money into a bank. Do you ever want to stop depositing money into your bank account?
No.
Never. You always want to deposit money. And typically, as time goes on, as you age, your wealth continues to increase. You tend to get more wealth in your life as you continue to age. So, Hannah, let me ask you this question. You're my daughter. I am supposed to die, pass, graduate, whatever word you want to use, before you do. That's the way it's supposed to happen.
Yeah.
Are you going to be happy with me if I take out withdrawals out of the policy?
I like that you're asking this question. No, I would hate that because you're surrendering the death benefit and I won't be able to see that death benefit when you're no longer here.
Absolutely. And not only am I surrendering the death benefit, I'm also withdrawing the growth. I'm withdrawing money from the policy, so I'm withdrawing growth, meaning I'm slowing down or essentially stopping the growth. This is why we talk about you never, ever, ever want to stop paying premium in a whole life policy in a mutual company that pays dividends. Because a lot of times people say, well, how long do I got to pay that premium for? Well,
Do I have to keep paying it?
Well, it's really up to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to you how long you pay for it.
Because you control it.
Yeah, but why would you ever, ever, ever want to stop depositing money into an account that's growing internally tax-free, guaranteed. Guaranteed. Now, when I say guaranteed, that's not my flapping gums or moving lips telling you it's guaranteed. That is in your policy contract. And every insurance company that we work with has a policy contract. And in that contract, before you ever accept, sign, and pay for your policy, you're going to see in the contract, you're going to see the growth that's going on. There's two columns. There's a guaranteed growth and a non-guaranteed growth. The only difference between guaranteed and non-guaranteed is the insurance company pays this thing they call dividends. Now, dividends are never guaranteed, but how do you know how much of a dividend you made? Every year on your policy anniversary date, you get what we call an in-force illustration, mm-hmm. and you look to see how did your policy perform. Did it perform as expected? Because the insurance company is going to project what that dividend is going to be. It may be higher than the actual dividend may be higher than what the insurance company says. It may be lower, but it's pretty spot on. But here's a key to that. For 123 consecutive years without fail, the insurance companies have never failed to pay a dividend. The ones that we work with, anyway. The mutual companies that we work with have never failed to pay a dividend. Now, 123 years, that's back to the year 1900. And there's been a lot of crap that's happened in this world since 1900, has it not? Go back to 1900. We've had recessions. We've had the Great Depression. Even through all those downtimes, the insurance company never, ever, ever failed to pay a dividend. So there is no better place on this planet that I've found. And I've been looking for now almost 20 years. It's 2024. I've been looking since 2006, right? I've never found a place that's better to build, keep, and protect wealth than a whole life policy in a mutual company that pays dividends. Maybe you know another place, but I've never found one that has these features and benefits. It's just a no-brainer. And then a lot of you guys get hung up. You're like, well, it's life insurance. I don't want to buy life insurance. Well, guys, gals, the thing you do, you buy car insurance, you buy house insurance. Are you guaranteed to use your car insurance?
No.
Or house insurance?
No.
Homeowners insurance?
No.
Your insurance on your golf cart, your insurance on your boat, whatever it is that you have insured, your dog. You have dog insurance too.
Are you
guaranteed to use that insurance? Absolutely not. But are you guaranteed to use life insurance?
Yes.
100%, because I don't care who you are listening to this, we all have an expiration date. You are going to die, pass, graduate, pick whatever word you like, at some point or another. So at that point, whenever that happens, there's going to be a windfall of money that's going to go to your beneficiaries tax-free. Now, maybe you're the type of person that doesn't love your family, doesn't like your family, doesn't want anything to do with your family, but that's okay. I'm sure there's something you would like to pass on, some generous generational wealth to. Maybe it's like a grandchild. Maybe it's a charitable organization. Who knows? Maybe it's a good cause, whatever it is. But the cool thing about what we're doing is we're using a portion of our death benefit while we're living. So essentially what we're doing is we're using our death benefit, a portion of that, while we are actually living. So we don't have to wait to die, pass, graduate to use the benefits of this life insurance plan that's specifically designed and specially engineered for the infinite banking concept. Now, let me be clear. This is not any type of policy. No. This is not the policy that you're going to go buy from your brother-in-law that sells life insurance. We all have a brother-in-law that sells life insurance, yep. Do we not? Yep. This is not that type of policy. Your brother-in-law does not know about this policy. If he did, he would have already told you about it, right? He doesn't know. This is a specifically designed, specially engineered whole life policy in a mutual company that pays dividends that is designed for high immediate cash value. I say immediate. What is my definition of immediate? Within 30 days. That means when you put money into this policy, you have cash value immediately within 30 days. No other vehicle on the planet that works this way.
And I like that you kind of brought up the more that the time goes on, the larger the growth and the compounding becomes, because you'll never want to stop that capitalization and the growth inside of the policy. And just the real life example, you know, I think about mom's oldest policy, right? Mom's oldest policy turned 16 years old just in February. Right. And so because she started in what, 2008?
Yep. 2008 is the very first policy that we started with the infinite banking concept. February of 2008. And we're sitting here in March of 2024.
Bingo. And so this year,
actually, I paid 17 years, because if you count like 08 and if you count last month, which was February 2024, we've actually paid 08 to 24, we paid 17 premiums on that policy. And I'm happy about that, because guess what? The policy, as you said, Hannah, gets more efficient with time. Yeah. Today's better than yesterday. Tomorrow's better than today. It's not me telling you that. It is in the policy contract. Yep. So every time I get in the mail, I get a notice to pay premium on a policy. And I think, how many policies do I have right now?
I think 28.
28 policies right now. So that means I get 28 different notices in the mail that come in, yep, and say premium due. Now, most people would say, oh, premium due on a life insurance policy. Boo, I got to pay money out. No. I'm dancing around in my Speedos whenever that comes, right? I'm happy. I'm excited. I'm ecstatic to pay that premium. Why? Because that policy is 1 year more efficient. The cash value is going up. It's increasing because this year is better than last year. Next year is going to be better than this year. And it continues to get better. It's in the contract. It's in the contract. The insurance companies are contractually obligated to pay those guaranteed values. And they do. Nobody, no matter what state you live in, nobody has ever lost money in a whole life policy in a mutual company that pays dividends.
Yep.
It hasn't happened.
Yep. No, and where I was kind of going with that is because, you know, mom's oldest policy, this year she put a dollar into it. How much did the cash grow by?
Like $2.50 ballpark. I think $2.54, something like that.
Bingo.
So every dollar that you put in, you got to use $2.50. That means if you put $100,000 in, you could use $250,000. Now, the amount you're able to put into the policy depends on the amount that you started it back with inception. And most of you guys, you know what you want to do? You want to put as little as possible in, yep, these policies. Well, let me ask you this. Do you want to put as little as possible into your bank account? Do you want to deposit as little money as possible? Do you want to call your employer and say, oh, you paid me $1,000. I really wish you only paid me $700, because I only want to put $700 in instead of $1,000. Absolutely, you don't do that.
Yeah.
So, but that's what you do. When you want to put money into a policy, you're thinking, well, how little can I put in? No. You got to change your paradigm. You got to change the way you think. You want to think, how much can I put in? How much can I put in? When we tell you, okay, Billy, You can put in $1,000 a month. And by the way, we don't ever tell you how much to put in. You tell us how much you want to put in. So the answer should be whenever we say, okay, Billy, you're going to put in $1,000 a month. You should be, well, why can't I put in $1,200 a month or $1,300 a month? You want to put in as much money as possible. In the book, Becoming Your Own Banker, that R. Nelson Nash wrote, on page 48, he says this. He says, it always sounds a bit strange when I say premium and income should equal. Let's start with a very basic, simple fact. Doesn't all your money run through somebody else's bank? Absolutely. So what happens when you get a paycheck? Or however you make money, it can be passive income, investment income, active income. It can be a check in the mail from grandma for your birthday. You get that money and you go put it into the conventional bank. Do you not? And guess what the bankers do with your money?
They lend it out.
That's what banks do. They lend money out. So the bankers lend that money out. They lend your money out, and they make a good living on the money that you leave there. Who makes that money? Not you. It's the profit holders and the shareholders of that bank. So how cool would it be if you could put that money in your own banking system? You're earning the interest and the dividends. There are no profit holders and shareholders, and the growth is growing internally tax-free.
Yep. Well, and then that's it too, because this past year she put a dollar into it. Let's just call it $2 that she was able to take out from it. That growth just in this year, and that's only the growth this year only, not talking about the past previous growth.
Nope.
But was that taxable or tax-free?
The growth in the policy is tax-free growth because it's growing internally in the policy. We've already paid tax on that money. We did it when we paid the premium. And when you use the money, when you go to use the money, if you're here at this conference or wherever, right, there's a lot of real estate conferences we speak at. So people buy property. They buy long-term rentals, short-term rentals, fix and flips. They buy Airbnbs, all kind of stuff in real estate. You know, it doesn't have to just be real estate. It's anything. But the thing that they do is they use the money in the policy. They put money in the policy because really, guys, look, all we're doing is adding one step to your wealth. We're putting money in the policy first. We're not going to change what you're doing. We're not going to change your cash flow, make you work any harder, take any additional risk or lose control. We're simply adding one step. You're putting your money in the policy first. So Nelson Nash says, hey, the bankers do what? They lend your money out to you. That's right. You deposit money in the bank and they loan that money back to you and then the banker makes all the profits, the interest, and the dividends on your money. So instead, add that one step, do a little bit of a paradigm shift, a mind shift here. Put the money in your own banking system first, a system that you own and control. There's no money being leaked out whatsoever. No money's being leaked out. It stays in that internal environment under your control.
That's it.
How cool is that?
Now, and then also just a misconception I just want to talk about while we're sitting here talking about the tax advantages of the policies is, you know, some people will ask me the question, well, if I take out this money, I take a loan from my policy, and let's go say I do some real estate investing or I do passive lending or whatever that you're doing with the money. Well, if I, let's say dad gives me a loan for $100,000, and now dad is going to charge me 13%, okay? And that's the family discount at 13% when I borrow money from the bank of dad.
Actually, it's 14, but who's counting?
and so when I am then paying dad back with that interest, that 13%, that is taxable as ordinary income because it's outside of the policy. It's taxed as ordinary income because it's outside the policy. Now, that's when it kind of comes into play that, yes, there's different tax strategies. You know, the 1041 world, you can have business trusts and just different things of what you're doing in the tax strategies and tax benefits to minimize the taxes. But some people have this misconception that, hey, if I take a loan from my policy and then I go put it to work for me, that growth outside of the policy, is that also still tax-free? And the answer is no.
That's right. So the thing that you're doing, like, for example, if I loaned you $100,000, and let's just say you're paying me 10% interest, that means I would get $10,000 a year in interest on that $100,000, $833 a month, whatever that is, right?
Yeah.
So as that money comes in, now remember, I took a loan from the policy, but I didn't take it out of the policy. The loan came from the general fund of the insurance company.
Yeah.
So the $100,000 I loaned you is still in my account. growing internally in that tax-free environment. Because I didn't take the principal out.
Yeah.
I put my policy up for collateral. So now I go to loan you the $100,000. You're paying me back 10% interest.
Yep.
And chances are, at the interest you're paying me, you're going to have as a tax deduction because you're a borrower.
Yep.
So you're paying me back. So, right, that's an interest just expense to you.
Yep.
Now, again, we're no CPAs or accountants. Check all your tax laws.
Yes.
But now that $10,000 a year that's coming to me, or the $830 a month, that would be taxable income to me. That mm-hmm. that income would be taxable because it's interest income coming to me. So, again, as I said earlier, don't do this just for the tax advantages. You're still, I mean, yes, there's still tax advantages. There's plenty of tax advantages. As far as you have in the policy, but it's not tax evasion. You're not evading taxes. You're not all of a sudden, just because policy money ran through and this and that, there's still taxes that you're going to have to pay. So the way to really check this out is hire a good CPA, a good accountant, a good lawyer that knows accounting, whatever it is, you know, get good advice. And let me just tell you, whenever you're setting up any kind of tax structure, don't go to like a big seminar and listen to the people on stage and take that as gospel. Do your due diligence. Hire a tax professional to guide you and help you and say, hey, this is what I heard. This is what they said I could do. Can I do it? Have that tax professional, whatever that is in your life, to just put the stamp of approval on it and say, yeah, you can do this or you can't do this. Because look, we all go to seminars and we listen to people talk and they all make it sound big and great and it's the best thing ever and you're never going to pay tax again. I just don't think that's realistic. It's not realistic. So, all right, normally if it sounds good, too good to be true, it usually is. If you're expecting unrealistic returns, for example, on your money, you probably should stay away from that. This is just my opinion, because a lot of that unrealistic stuff you may hear, there may be some caveats to that that just don't jive. So just do your own due diligence. That's all.
And actually, you know what Larry Steinhaus says? Larry Steinhaus says that he loves paying taxes because that means he's making money.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely.
So I know we're getting close here to the time that you got to get up on stage and start speaking. But last topic that I just want to cover is when I am utilizing my policies, I just want to give some advice to folks. Now, I have a whole episode on why I'm using a separate segregated checking account when it comes to me doing my banking, flowing money in and out of my policies. But just some advice, that this is why I use my segregated account, is because any money that comes out of my policy, it's all loans. Loans are never taxable in the traditional sense. And even if I did want to take a withdrawal up to my cost basis, that would be tax-free too. But I have that segregated checking account where my policy money gets deposited directly into there, because then come around tax time, it's easy to identify what's taxable income and what's not if I'm not commingling it with my main checking account. So that's one reason of why I use it. Another little reason too, totally just excluding the policies out of it, is rule number one of what dad you always taught me is pay yourself first. And so what I do as well is when I get paid my money, doesn't matter how I'm making the money, it all gets deposited into my main account, and I take a sliver of that. And what Chris Noggle kind of teaches us with the 10 laws of wealth, that we should be saving at least 10% of our income before you go and pay anybody else first. Take a sliver of that money, at least the 10%, and just move it to that segregated checking account and don't touch the money. That's you paying yourself first. And then that's how I also pay my premiums inside of my policy, from that segregated checking account. But the biggest reason is that it just is easy for my tax guy, so he doesn't have to go in there and detangle the mess and identifying what's taxable income and what's not, just keeping things separate.
Yeah, so basically it's just more for convenience and, you know, to keep just things so they don't become messy. You know, I'm of the mindset that I want to try to get every dollar in the policy as possible, because anytime I put money into a policy, it's like putting a deposit into my own bank account, right? So now as Nelson says in the book on page 48, premium and income should equal.
Yeah.
Well, most people can never get to premium and income just can equal because the insurance company won't allow you to have that much coverage on yourself, right? Mm-hmm. So, because there's only so much the insurance company will allow you to insure your body for, just like a car. You can't overinsure a car. You can't overinsure a house. So your body has a human life value. And the insurance company looks at your human life value as your gross income, your age, your health, and your net worth. It's kind of a scary way to do it, but that's the way they do it, right? And there's times where we can get a bit more than what the norm is. We just have to send in a cover letter or explain why you want additional coverage and things like that. But again, the ultimate thing is let's try to get the money into the policy first. Because once we get the money into the policy, again, as we talk the whole time here, it's growing in a tax-free environment. And you're able to use that money for anything that you want. Mm-hmm. Anything. There's no limitations of what you can use the money for. The insurance company never asks you, well, why do you want to take a policy loan? And if you take a policy loan, are you going to pay back the policy loan? They don't care. The insurance company does not care whatsoever, right? Yeah. So, yeah.
No, good. Well, no, and thank you. Thanks for joining all me, right. Dad. I know it's kind of hard to nail you down sometimes. We're always on the road, especially you and I nowadays. We're kind of doing our own things. And so I appreciate you for being here. And good luck today. I'll be in the audience helping you, passing out the handouts. And keep continuing to reach out to me, okay? Y'all got my email, Hannah. Hannah spelled the same ways forwards and backwards. Hannah@themoneymultiplier.com. So reach out to me with your questions. And honestly, y'all, when y'all are reaching out to me or I'm talking to you one-on-one on our strategy calls. I mean, I write your questions down if I kind of have an FAQ that keeps popping up. And that's how I keep creating more and more of this content and pushing it out because I'm just here to help the community and I want to see y'all do better for yourselves and your family. So
I always say it's just what the late Zig Ziglar said, right? You help enough other people get what they want and you end up getting what you want. So that's all that we do is we just try to serve you. We try to pour content into you and serve. And then all this information that you get, this knowledge that you get, don't keep it to yourself. You need to share it with others, especially your family, especially your children and your grandchildren. You guys need to start getting together more with your family members, children, grandchildren, and you need to have conversations about money.
Start talking.
I know
about
it's a hard conversation. No matter how good we do or how bad we do, it's a difficult conversation. We don't like talking about money. You've got to start having these conversations. You have to, because you got to keep that wealth in your family and create, build, keep generational wealth in your family, pass it down from generation to generation.
That's it. And stay tuned because next week, get this, tomorrow we're headed to New Zealand. And so I'll be there with mom and dad. And then my best girlfriend, Maddie, is coming down with me. And so we got a really cool episode planned for next week while we're out there. So stay tuned and thanks for tuning in, y'all. I'll see you next week. Catch you then.
Bye-bye.